Sex selection. Cat got your tongue? Unnatural selection. Choosing boys over girls and the consequences of a world full of men by Mara Vistendahl.
As he walked into the maternity ward of Lok Nayak Jayaprakash Narayan Hospital in Delhi on his first day at work in 1978, Puneet Bedi, a medical student, saw a cat bound past him with a bloody blob dangling from its mouth. What was that thing, wet with blood, mangled, about the size of Bedi's fist? He remembers thinking. Before long it struck him. Near the bed, in a tray normally reserved for disposing of used instruments, lay a fetus of 5 or 6 months, soaking in a pool of blood. He told a nurse, then a doctor, "I saw a cat eat a fetus." Nobody on duty seemed concerned, however. Mara Vistendahl, a writer at Science magazine, is profoundly concerned, both about the fact that abortion was treated so casually and the reason. Why had the fetus not been disposed of more carefully? A nurse's explanation came out cold. Because it was a girl. Sex-selective abortion is one of the largest, least-noticed disasters in the world. Though concentrated in China and India, it is practiced in rich and poor countries and in Buddhist, Hindu, Christian and Muslim societies alike. Because of males' greater vulnerability to childhood disease, nature ensures that 105 boys are born for every 100 girls, so the sexes will be equal at marriageable age. Yet China's sex ratio is 120 boys per 100 girls. India's is 109 to 100. The usual view of why this should be stresses traditional son preference in South and East Asia. Families wanted a son to bear the family name, to inherit property, and to carry out funerary duties. Ms. Vistendahl has little truck with this account, which fails to explain why some of the richest, most outward-looking parts of India and China have the most skewed sex ratios. According to her account, sex selection technologies were invented in the West, adopted there as a population control measure, and exported to East Asia by Western aid donors and American military officials. The ultrasound and other technologies that identify the sex of a fetus started out as diagnostic devices to help people with sex-linked diseases, such as haemophilia, conceive healthy children. They were greeted rapturously in America in the 1960s. "Ultrasound device takes guessing out of pregnancy," ran one headline. "Control of life. Audacious experiments promise decades of added life," ran another. But 1960s America was also a period of growing concern, hysteria even, about population in developing countries. Policymakers, demographers, and military men all thought rapid population growth was the biggest single threat to mankind and that drastic measures would be needed to rein it in. One such figure was Paul Ehrlich, whose book The Population Bomb became a bestseller in 1968. Mr. Ehrlich pointed out that some Indian and Chinese parents would go on having daughter after daughter until the longed-for son arrived. If, he argued, they could be guaranteed a son right away, those preliminary daughters would not be born, and population growth would be lower. Sex selection became a tool in a wider battle to stop overpopulation. But how did an obsession of Western policymakers turn into the widespread practice of destroying female fetuses in Asia? Partly, argues Ms. Vistendahl, through aid. The Ford and Rockefeller Foundations gave over $3 million to the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, or AIIMS, in the 1960s, helping it to pioneer India's first amniocentesis tests, initially for genetic abnormalities, and later for identifying fetal sex. India at that time was the World Bank's biggest client, and the bank made loans for health projects conditional on population control. No less important, American military officers helped make abortion the population control tool of choice in those Asian countries where they wielded influence, first in Japan in the late 1940s and 1950s, then South Korea in the 1960s. USAID, America's aid agency, provided jeeps for mobile clinics which roamed South Korea performing abortions. At one point, a quarter of the country's health budget was going on population control, and the number of abortions hit an all-time record in Seoul, where in 1977 there were 2.75 abortions for every live birth. One sociologist asks, what would have happened if the government hadn't allowed for such easy abortion? I don't think sex-selective abortion would have become so popular. Miss Vistendahl is convincing in telling the little-known story of how Westerners helped create the conditions under which sex selection began in Asia. But our emphasis on the West's role is less sure an explanation for the practices spread throughout China and India. China's coercive population control policies were developed in the late 1970s, at the end of the Cultural Revolution and the early reforms of Deng Xiaoping. This was a period of isolation and modest opening up, when China was not much interested in Western advice. The available records are scanty, so it is hard to be sure, but the influence of Westerners on the one-child policy seems modest. Westerners had more clout in India, but it turns out some of them used it against, rather than for, sex selection. One Indian doctor from Ames, arguing in favour of sex-selective abortions, concedes that this may not be acceptable to persons in the West. Oh. Miss Vistendahl's history is marred by the occasional lapses into self-righteousness and polemic. She says others who have written about sex-selection technology have not been critical enough, because blaming backward cultural traditions is simpler. She dismisses a World Bank report that said South Korean actions to combat sex selection had worked as flat-out wrong, apparently because it would let the bank off the hook for previous support of population control. She calls Western population policies a plot. Still, the merits of her book outweigh such flaws. Miss Vistendahl's distinctive contribution is twofold. She provides a history of the modern practice of sex-selective abortion based on new and detailed research, and she helps readers think about its possible consequences. Most of them look grim. America's violent Wild West, she points out, had a huge preponderance of men. Excess males in central and southern China also contributed to the Taiping Rebellion of 1850-64, one of the bloodiest civil wars in history. Sex selection, Miss Vistendahl says, still does not get its proper attention. Female genital mutilation is all over the websites of UNICEF and the World Health Organization. Sex selection, in contrast, hardly gets a mention. One hopes her book will help the subject get its due.